Good morning. We're learning the 22nd chapter, Perek Chaf Bet in Sefer Shmuel Aleph. We actually began already the first few sentences. We are on page 142 on our new packet. There's also a little map available for those that would like to. When we get to that part of the story, we'll see where David is running off to next. David is being chased by the king. Shaul wants to kill him. And as we mentioned in the beginning psukim, we're going to begin with Pasuk Gimel in a moment, but the first two psukim told us that when David ran away, he had to hide in a cave. And it wasn't just an issue for himself. Of course, the king wanted to kill him. But as we often find in the mafia, if you can't kill the guy you want, well, you go after their family, their wife, their spouse, whatever it may be, their children, their siblings. And therefore, all of David's family was in danger. And because of this, David's family ran away with him. But because David was a very powerful man, very influential, remember he was a brave warrior that people looked up to because of his skills and fighting ability, a lot of people joined him. In fact, 400 people, approximately 400 people joined him in hiding. They didn't care that they were not in the nicest of surroundings. The accommodations were less than perfect. It wasn't a five-star hotel. They were stuck in some damp, dark cave. But because they were with David, they were 100% secure. And the Pesukim told us that these were people that were down and out themselves. Either they couldn't afford to pay back the loans that they owed, and they had some loan sharks who wanted to break a couple of their legs. Mar Nefesh, the Pesuk says, people who are bitter, their souls were bitter, which could be that they were spiritually depressed. They felt emotionally distraught. And David was a person who, by attaching themselves to the tzaddik, would boost up their self-esteem and their overall morale. Let's continue with Pasuk Gimel. The Pasuk tells us, V'yelech David misham mispe Moab, that David went from there. He went to Mitzvah Moab. And we're going to see what he does at Moab. The Yomer El Melech Moab, he says to the king, Yetzi na avi v'imi itchem, let my father and my mother stay by you, because their lives are also in danger. Ad asher eid, until I know ma yaseh li Elohim. Hashem will give me some instruction eventually to tell me what I'm supposed to do. Now the question is, why only his father and his mother? So we mentioned, which is also we saw last week in English on 143, is that his parents were just as in danger as David, as his siblings. But the difference between David and his father Yishai is a bunch of years. And Yishai, who was already advanced in age, it would be too difficult for him and his wife to be running around and hiding. And therefore, David realized the only way they could really survive is if they could have some type of relationship with a powerful king, and hopefully they'll protect his father and his mother. And we'll see how true the king of Moab is to his word. But the reason why he chose Moab is because we know David, who was the great-grandson of Boaz and Ruth. Ruth, who of course descended, who came from Moab. She was a Moabite woman. And therefore, because he was directly related to this nation of Moab, he was hoping that they would show compassion to his parents. We'll end up seeing whether or not that, in fact, was the case. Okay, let's continue. We did see a Pasuk Gimel as well last week, so let's turn to page 144, Pasuk Dalet. V'yanchem es p'nei melech Moab. And so it happened that the king took care of him, took care of these people, his father and his mother. V'yeshu imo kol yemei heyos David b'mitsuda. and they were able to dwell with this king all the days in which David was Bamsuda, as Masuda Sion translates over here, in Makum Shumar, in a guarded place, which means that David was either by the Migdal, Osela, Gomara, he was nearby in a tower overseeing, maybe he was by a huge boulder, a rock, or in a cave. So as long as David was nearby, in arm's reach, that was the time in which his parents were safe, and that the king of Moab protected his parents. So it's a very nice thing. Must be the king of Moab was an excellent person, upstanding citizen. Well, Rashi over here tells us that we can actually infer something which is extremely negative about the king of Moab. Because when was the king of Moab real trustworthy, that he was not going to do anything bad to his parents? Only because David was nearby. So let's see this Rashi on page 144, the very first Rashi on the right side. It says, V'yeshu imo koi mehiyos David bamsuda, somach l'moav, which means that he was nearby this nation of Moab. That's the only time the king was showing the respect and listening to David. Maybe because he was scared that David himself would kill him if he wouldn't listen to him. However, says Rashi, v'shiyatza David misham, that when David went away from Moab to a different place, to this forest, Harag Melech Moab as Abid as Imo V'Achim. So you'd think that this would be a person who would maybe not even protect, but he certainly is not going to kill his parents. But we find, in fact, that that's exactly what happened. The king of Moab, as soon as David turned his back, he killed David's father, David's mother, and his brothers. Chutz me'echad shemehem. There was only one of the relatives of David that somehow survived. Shehichyo nachash ha'moini. That he was able to survive this one person through the means of this person by the name of Nachash. And the person's name, even though it's not mentioned in Rashi, is Elihu. That's how it's translated, said in English. He was happy that his brother Elihu was the one person that was spared from death. And we can actually, as we already saw this, but if you go back to the English on page 143, you have this lengthy paragraph which is underlined where it says the number 3. It said that David felt that his parents and the rest of his family would be safe with the king of Moab because Yishai was the descendant of Ruth, who was a Moabite princess, according to Tosfos Rid. But he was mistaken, because as long as David was in the fortress when he was nearby, near Moab, the king remained gracious host, perhaps fearing David's vengeance if he harmed the family. But as soon as David left the fortress, the king betrayed him and murdered David's family, with the exception of one brother who had been away and was protected by the king of Ammon, which Rashi told us the king of Ammon was Nachash, snake.
Wasn't he afraid that David would come now with anybody?
Didn't he think if he was so afraid of him that he might come back sometime and
give likewise
to him? Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I can see
it's
more from David.
Right. So if we look at the map, this doesn't always answer the question, but if you can divert someone's attention, it usually gets you forget the question. No, if you look at the map, it may answer the question, I don't know. You see his pattern of where he's running. We saw before where he was in Gath, as it says, which was a Philistine place. That's where he acted insane, or he pleaded temporary insanity. Maybe he was really insane. And we see that he kept running this pattern until we go all the way down to Moab, which is the bottom of the map, right next to the Dead Sea. And perhaps that we're going to see that this map doesn't display that as he continued to run back and he was being pursued by the people of Shaul, that they want to kill him. That's why he's running away from them. For him to turn back even if maybe he would know that his parents were murdered by the king of Moab, he would know that by turning back, he himself would be killed by Shaul's messengers and soldiers, possibly.
So the killing of at Moab, that really had nothing to do with Shaul. Shaul didn't tell them. Shaul tell them. Did they do it to get on the side of Shaul? Why?
Could be. It could be, because we're going to end up seeing the next psukim telling us how Shaul is extremely disappointed that people did not show allegiance and respect to him. And if you side with David, and he comes and visits you, and you don't turn him in, then you yourself will be killed. And that we're going to see, which could possibly very well have been the fear of Melech Moab, because we're going to see a different nation, or different city, by the name of Nov, which is called Nov Ir HaKohanim, that did not kill David, did not kill any of his family. Instead, they gave him provision, they provided food for him when he was starving to death, gave him a sword. And we're going to end up seeing in this parak that the entire nation, the entire city of Nov is going to be wiped out, it's going to be killed. So possibly, this will happen, but maybe the king of Moab realized the possibility of that happening to him as well if he doesn't show that he's not showing any respect whatsoever to David. And maybe the idea is if he tried to kill David, David was an incredible, miraculous warrior, I can't kill him, but at least I'll wipe out his entire family to show that I'm definitely on the king Shaul's side. Maybe, but you certainly would want to believe that there's a connection between the why the king of Moab did this to the next verses, which we're going to see at this point. Let's move on to Pasuk Hey. Pasuk Hey tells us V'yomer God Hanavi El David, and this actually could also answer our question. Maybe David was inspired to want to turn back. And, or maybe even to stay where he was, because of the fear that David realized that the king of Moab may eventually kill his family. But God, who was a Navi, and when a prophet gives you a Nevuah, you have to listen exactly to what he says. Lo seishe bamsuda, you may no longer stay in this hiding spot. Lech uvasa lecha eretz Yehuda, I want you to go instead to a different place. The land of Yehuda, which is not on our map. V'yelech David v'yavo yaris charas. And therefore, David did exactly as the prophet told him, just as God instructed him, and he went along to this new place called Ya'ar Charas. Ya'ar is a forest. So this is what the Navi told him to do. So he had no choice but to listen to him.
Where does Navi come from? I mean, was he in Moab? I mean, just out of the blue, there's nothing in the commentary as to who he is or where he came from?
We don't find any place where he's mentioned, but possibly he was one of the 400. When we talk about these 400 people, they were not just lowlives, the people that were deadbeats that couldn't pay their bills, but it was also people who... Mar Nafesh could also mean that they were very inspired by their soul. They're very spiritual individuals. So it could be that God was among the 400 followers of David. That's a possibility. It's not. I didn't see anywhere where otherwise where he came from.
Well, there would have to be people, some of them, who were inspired by David.
Right. So it would make sense that he would maybe be one of them.
Nobody doesn't speak directly that the parents were killed. It's just in Rashi that he says that. Wouldn't that be something that would be written? I'm just surprised that it's not the Farish.
Yeah. It's a good question. I mean, up until this point, they haven't been killed. And David, the Navi, which is being written at this point through David's eyes, right now his parents were not killed and he will not actually see them with his own eyes being murdered. So this is kind of what's happening with his back turned. But it is interesting that we don't find in the psukim themselves them being murdered. Because we will find that when it comes to Nov, the Ir HaKohanim, the city of Kohanim being killed. Let's look at the Radak. The Radak tells us, which the part which underline in Pasuk Hey, Uvasuchal Eretz Yehuda, go to Yehuda. Why there? What's so special then? Pi Hashem Amarlo. First of all, I'm not just giving you some good advice. I didn't just map quest it and say it's the closest place to go to. But the reason why is because Hashem told me that this is where you should go. Ki Shamiyan Nishmar Min Shaul. This is a place where you'll be protected from the king who jumped down a line. But Tom, the reason why this is a good place for you to be protected, Fishab Eretz Yehuda Hayu Ohavim Oso. There's a place, believe it or not, that people actually don't want to kill you. There's actually some people that still like you. Vim Hayu Kam Shaul Lavaksho. And if the king himself would come to ask for you, and he would know that you were in their city, while they were in the middle of speaking, you would be able to flee from one place to the next, which means that they will not turn you in. They will do their best to make sure that you'll be protected and safe from the king. And therefore, for your safety, Hashem is giving me this instruction that the best thing you can possibly do at this point is to go to this new place, to the place which is occupied by the tribe of Yehuda. Pasuk Vav. Vayishma Shaul, and Shaul heard what this prophet said. Kinoda David, Vayishma Shaul, and Shaul heard. Kinoda David, about what was known by David, Vanoshim Asher Ito, and all the men that were with him as well. It wasn't just that David is by himself running alone. He now realized that he's getting a group of people on his side. A lot of people. 400. Vishal Yoshe Begiva. And Yoshe was sitting in a valley. Tachas Ha'eshel. Eshel, the Mitzvah Sion translates as an Elon, a tree, just like we find in Sefer Bereishis by Yita Eshel, also by Abraham planting a tree. Achilash Fialina, right. It's an acronym for eating, drinking, and sleeping. Right. That's another interpretation of the word Eshel. But Eshel is, Mesudas Sion translates, he sat underneath a tree, Barama, Bachinisa Biyado, and he had Shaul, this king, with anger, who's holding with a very tight grasp his spear, the whole of Adam Nitzavim Alav, and he had all of his men standing around him, waiting for him to bark the next order to them. And possibly the reason why it was he was underneath an Eshel, we find this by many great leaders. Most commonly in Sefer Shoftim, we find this by Devorah. Right? Devorah sat underneath a date palm tree. And this was a way of showing her power, and this is also what was done as well when it came to the king. That could be a simple explanation, that great leaders, they would sit for shade underneath a tree. So let's look at Rashi. Rashi doesn't talk about Devorah, talks about a different idea. Rashi says, Tachas ha'eshel barama, achas shahayis ha'bigvul binyamin. This was a tree which was stationed on the boundary of Binyamin. Rabbi Senu Amru and our sages tell us from Tractate Tinus, Hi ha'isa Rama shel Shmuel. This is similar to the Rama where Shmuel lived. B'shnei mekam osein. It's possible that there are really two places. B'schus ha'eshel ha'gadol asher b'Rama. But it's coming to teach us that even though it's really two separate places, but there is a connection between that and this. In the merit of the Eshel, this great tree, Asher Barama, which was in the heights, Shehayis Mispalel Alav, that he used to daven by it. Which means that Shmuel, the reason why Shaul was unsuccessful, was not able to kill David, was because of the prayers, the tefillos of Shmuel. So even though Shmuel seems to be nowhere in sight, where he is in some dusty old synagogue praying, but those tefillos have the capacity to be able to protect and save the very life of David. That's how Rashi interprets how he's sitting in Ramah, that he's unable to do anything. He's just sitting there because the king cannot move to kill him as long as another man in Ramah, Shmuel, is engaged in tefillah praying on David's behalf. So is the power of tefillah. That's how powerful one's tefillahs are.
When David went to meet Shmuel, did he meet him, Ramah?
Yes.
Did you meet him up here?
I believe so, yeah. That's where he lived. That's where he was. Yeah. Okay. We look at the Radak over here. The Radak tells us Ki Noda David. Because he knew David? What does that mean? Ki Noda David. Of course he knew David. David used to play some musical instruments and he used to be one of his greatest soldiers. What do you mean that the king knew David? So the Radak translates the word Noda not as no, with a K. Rather, Kinis Parsim David. It became revealed that which David did. Kolmar, Noda, it was known. Noda Hadavar Shahaya Imo Anashim. Now it became known that David is accumulating a mass of people. And we move a few more words. Ki Ad Atah, because until now, Lo Yada Shaul Ki Iskavsu El David Anashim. He didn't really know that David was gathering any people. He just thought David was running away for his life by himself. Vaker Shama, but once the king heard, Ki Imo Ki Arba Meos Ish, he heard that there is approximately 400 people that are with him. Amar Belibu, he said, Zem Maranhu, this guy is rebellious. Shemarabi, he's rebelling against me. Vedaita L'Arov, and his intention is to ambush me, V'ilachim Eli, eventually to wage war against me. Olchaluk Eloi Hamalchus, so at the very least, to divide my kingship, that he'll maybe take half and I'll take half, which I want all or nothing. Actually, just all or all. And I'm not willing to compromise on that either. So this was really the time that Shaul was getting extremely nervous and angry. That's why he was holding onto a spear. What's he going to do with a spear? David's not anywhere around. He's holding it like he's polishing his sword, waiting with anticipation for the moment that he can eventually stick David with this sharp weapon. Because this is how angry he was, because he realizes that the time is coming that David is going to maybe overthrow him from the throne. Pasuk Zayin. Vayomer Shaul la'avadav. So Shaul said to his servants, Hanitzavim alav, because we said that they were standing around him as he's sitting there with this holding spear underneath a tree. Shimna b'nei yamin, listen to me, b'nei yamini, which comes from the word binyamin. As Mesudas David tells us, most of his servants came from that tribe. Gam l'kulchem yitin ben yishai sado sukramim. For all of you, did this guy, Ben Yishai, I don't even want to mention his name, happens to be David. Ben Yishai, did he give you fields and vineyards? L'kulchem yasin, to all of you, did he place Sari Lachim and Sari Meos for thousands and hundreds? Is this the reason why you're not telling me this information, where he is, that he provided you with all this money? Pasuches, ki kash...
Am I the only one that's understanding?
What was that?
It's not very clear to me.
Which is part of the reason, one of the reasons why he may not remain king. He knew that he wasn't necessarily going to be a king forever because it's going to come from Yehuda. But his mistakes shortened his term anyway. So he said, what do you guys... Why aren't you... Someone here must have heard something. There's no way that none of you have any idea where this guy is. Ki kishartem kulchem. Olai. Kishartem is translated to Sion as Indian agudas anashim. Did you all gather up about me? V'engola es ozni. That no one can reveal to my ears. B'charas b'ni im ben yishai. Exactly the status of this man, where he is, don't you realize how much he's killing me? Ve'en cholem mikem, olai. There's no sick person among you because of me. Ve'golas ozni, to reveal it to my ears. And the Talmud learns out from here that you're supposed to make yourself sick to be able to give over information. I'll discuss that in a second. The language of Shaul. Ki hekim b'nias avyolai l'orev kayom hazeh. Because this What exactly is going on over here? What's happening is he may very well, with all of his troops and all of his men, he may eventually come about to wish to ambush me in a very short period of time. And I mentioned the unusual language that the Talmud picks out over here, that we learn, Omer Rava, that im Talmud Chacham hu, if a person is a scholar, sarech sheyichla atzma alav, and if that scholar is sick, then you need to ask mercy for him to be healed until that you yourself become sick. Doesn't mean literally sick, but it means that you put all of your emotions and all your resources to be able to have this person be healed. And that's the reason, this is the source, that Shaul was bothered that there was not a sick person among you. Now, it doesn't seem like any of you are bothered. You don't care. You guys sleep well at night. Doesn't seem to bother you that I'm in such distress that I don't know where this David character is. And you should be distressed. You should be helping me out. You should be showing the allegiance due and respect due to me. We look at the Radak over here. The Radak tells us, as we mentioned, Ben Yishai is Lo Zachar Shmo. He doesn't even want to mention David's name. David? Mention his name? That's a Derech B'Zayim. It's a humiliating and disgusting thing to speak that you don't even want to mention the person's name. That's how angry he is. What was that?
He doesn't mention Yonatan's name either. He says Ben Yishai.
Right. He was disgusted by his son because he also felt that his son, he knew that his son showed allegiance to him as well. He knew that he made a deal with him. And his whole family, his daughter as well, David's wife. So he was, but it's interesting how the Radak doesn't pick on that. Bini could mean, you know, you can call your son, you don't have to mention him by name all the time. But certainly when it comes to Ben Yishai, doesn't mention his name. And the Mesudas David translates similar to what we said before in Pasaches, Ki kashartim kulchem asisim alai kesher. To all of you, you made a knot, a connection. Ki ilu hevtiach tovu kulchem. As though he's promised you something good to all of you. Is this the truth? That this is what he did? That he promised you all this wealth, he promised you all this good? And that's the reason why none of you are telling me where he is? Someone here must know something. Where was he? No one has a clue where he is. Who is this guy? Like Osama bin Laden? No one knows where he is. It's crazy. Pasuk Tes. Vayan doeg hadomi. Among all of the people there, one person did speak up, and his name was Doeg. What? Yes. We heard his name because of what he's going to reveal is that he was in a certain place where David was. David was in a city called Nov Ir HaKohanim, and there Doeg was there, as Rashi mentioned, there he was learning, he was praying. I mean, he seems like a good guy. Happens to be, the Talmud tells us that this person, Doeg, is one of the people that will have is Ein L'Chelok Olam Haba. There's no portion of the world to come, that's what the Talmud says. So, probably a pretty bad guy. Even though on one hand he was learned, he was scholarly, he prayed, that doesn't always make you a good person.
Was he Jewish, or was he called a dummy because he character?
There's different explanations. We're going to get to the idea of Adomi in a moment. What Adomi could mean red, which we'll explain a few interpretations of what Doeg, where the word Doeg comes from, and the word Adomi. Let's just first see Pasuk Tet, and then afterwards we'll discuss his name a little bit. Vayan Doeg HaAdomi. So Doeg spoke up. V'hu nitzav al abdi sha'ol v'yomar. He was standing like all the other servants next to the king, and he said, Re'isi as Ben Yishai. He also doesn't want to call him by name. I saw this guy that you're looking for, the guy who's wanted, dead or alive. I know where he was. Ba Noveh. He went to a place by the name of Noveh, or Nov. And if you want to know who the Kohen in charge over there, that city, his name was El Achimelech Ben Achituv. So, this is a little nice juicy piece of Lashon Hara for you. That not only was David in this city, but there was a guy by the name of Achimelech who might have been instrumental in saving and protecting David from from any potential harm, or certainly turning him in to the king.
That wasn't in Ir Michlot or anything like that.
No, no. Ir HaKohanim. This where we're going to see 85 great Kohanim lived, and also many other people as well. So the Yalkut explains that in this place we find the spelling of Doeg is Dalid Aleph Gimel. That's what it says in our pasuk. But if we turn the page to page 146, you'll notice, interestingly enough, that when Doeg's name is mentioned in pasuk Yudchet or verse 18, there's brackets, but ignore the brackets. That's the way it's read. But you'll notice it's written Dalid Vav, Vav Yud, Ve, like woe. Oy vey. That's what Vav Yud together is a sign of woe. So interesting that his name sometimes is Dalit Aleph Gimel, and sometimes it's written with a Vav and a Yud instead of the Aleph. So the Yalkut tells us a couple of fascinating things. Om Rav Yochanan, I don't have it in our packet. Rav Yochanan says, B'tchilu Yoshev Kodesh Baruch Hu V'Doeg. Doeg is his name, but also could mean he was someone who was concerned, someone who was worried. Hashem was concerned and worried. Shema Yatzezel Tarvasra. This person has the potential to do some really nasty things in this world. And once it happened, so right now his name is Doeg. I'm concerned, I'm worried. But after he actually did something wrong, which ended up causing the whole city of Nob to be killed and destroyed because of the Lashon Hara he said about them, what does Hashem do? Hashem changes his name from Dalad Aleph Gimel to the Vav Yud, as though to say, Vey, oy vey, woe, Shiyatzazah. In fact, he did turn out to be exactly as I was concerned. We know that when it comes to a little bit of mysticism here, that there is such a thing as Gilgul Neshamot, loosely translated as reincarnation. And what that means obviously needs tremendous research and discussion. But nonetheless, Doeg and Achitofel, it's brought down in various mystical svarim, that Doeg and Achitofel, who were both Rishayim in their own right, they both did not merit the world to come. Doeg, as we're going to discuss here, Achitofel later. You notice that the letters of their names, Dalid for Doeg, and Achitofel begins with the letter Aleph. It's brought down that they were considered to be the Gilgul Neshamos of Dasan and Avira, which we discussed there, Rishis. And Dasan, similar to Doeg, starts with the letter Dalid. And Aviram, just like Achitofel, also Aviram begins with the letter Aleph. And some people interpret this is what it means. Hayadoeg HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when it says Dalad Aleph Gimel, Hashem was concerned. Shema Gam Atah BeGilgul Zeh Yishna Lachet. I gave them a second chance to come back on earth to undo the wrong that they did, what Dustin and Aviram did in the days of Moshe, and all the terrible things that they did. And I'm hoping, I'm concerned, I'm Doeg. And what ended up happening? Hashem noticed that Doeg again sinned. And therefore he said, Ve. That's why he changed again to Vav Yud, to show his how upset he was that in fact he gave them this other opportunity to maybe do tshuva in this world for a second time and end up blowing it again, destroying, wiping out innocent city of Kohanim. So that explains the one explanation of what Doeg means, the word Doeg. What is Adomi? Adomi could mean a few things. Adomi is brought down in the Yalkut, could be a hint to the word red. Because we know David, not Doeg, but David, when he was born, just like Esav, he was born red. So it says, why is he called Doeg Adomi? He was a man, Doeg, who was completely focused all of his attention on Adomi, on this person who was red, on David. That he was completely consumed by David HaMelech and jealous by him to the point that he ended up turning him in and ratting him out that he was once in the city of Nob. Another interpretation comes from the word Adomi, does not necessarily mean the color of his skin, but it can come from the word Dam, blood, which teaches us Al Shehiter Damun Shel Nob Ira Kohanim, that Doeg was a person who felt it was okay to be Adomi, to spill the blood of all these innocent Kohanim. And finally, another interpretation brought down by Rav Nachman, Al Shehiter Damo Shel David. Maybe it's not referring to the Adomi, the blood of the Kohanim, but that he was willing to have different person's blood spilled, namely that of David, by turning him in exactly where he was located, even though he's not there now, that's where he was. So that's another interpretation of Adomi. Yeah.
But he's not necessarily considered an Edomite. He's a Jew.
That's a simple explanation. Those are different interpretations, but yeah.
Something occurs to me when they say Adomi, could it also mean a person consumed by rage and therefore the blood would rush
right
into their face?
Yeah, I think that's probably a better way of explaining the first interpretation. Adomi is not other people's blood, but it's his own blood. Right. Could be. Very good. Excellent.
Well, I can't understand though why he permitted Yishai to die like that of this. I mean, Yishai was one of the great of all generations.
The king of Moab that killed Yishai?
Yeah, that he would kill Yishai. And also, Hashem to let the whole city of Kohanim.
No, are you getting into that territory?
Yishai was really, they said, I think, the Gemara, he was really one of the greatest tzaddikim.
But look what's happening. He, the king of Moab realizes this is, instead of Doeg speaking about Nob, Ira Kohanim, someone else would be speaking about the king of Moab, how he protected his family and then he would be wiped out.
Yeah,
so he's saving his own life.
No, all these 85 people didn't get together and try to stop him. He was one person. The others refused to do it.
Well, he was the fact that
when Noah was killing the Kohanim and Noah,
did he do it?
He did it himself.
That way, yeah.
We're gonna end up seeing that next week that no one else wanted to do it. No one else wanted to take that to spill the blood. But Doeg was told to do it and he ended up being the one that actually killed. In fact, we're gonna see, since he's the one that volunteered this information, you started this whole situation, you finish it off. But this is the idea. A person realizes it's going to be my life or yours. I'm going to end up turning you in. I'm going to have to kill you to make sure that I won't be killed. You know, my life is in danger. So, unfortunate, but that was the way that Yishai died. He was brutally murdered by the king of Moab. Okay, let's see. We're going to see one more pasuk today. Pasuk Yud. Pasuk Yud continues. V'yishalo b'Hashem. And what did we'll see the next two psukim. V'yishalo b'Hashem. And this guy, this is me, I'm Doeg Adomi, I'm speaking about what I saw in the city Nov. I saw this guy David, he came on Shabbos, he was starving, or he was, I don't know what he was, he just came in. V'yishalo b'Hashem. He started asking to God. He started asking questioned by Hashem, and the Siddur David says, Urim Batumim. This guy allowed him to use the Urim Batumim. Now, come on, David was supposed to have been turned in. Now he's allowing him to use the Urim Batumim? That's one of the things this terrible, terrible Achimelech did.
Wait a minute, I'm just looking at English. Who did the inquiring from God?
V'yishol lo b'Hashem. This is Doeg HaAdomi who's relaying to the king the information that David received information with Achimelech's help to know, David wanted to know what to do. So
wasn't Achimelech who asked Hashem?
Right, but what he's doing, he's saying that Achimelech was wrong for allowing the Urim Batumim to be used for David's sake. He should have turned David in, and here he is, he's allowing to find out information, inside information. V'yishol lo b'Hashem. What Doeg is doing is building up the case to really turn to make Achimelech look really bad. V'seda v'nasan lo. And Seda, as Masuda Sion says, Mazon, gave him food. He gave him a whole bunch of food. So here he was. David might have been doing well. He was fine. So he decided, a very healthy and happy David, just to give him more and more food. He let them use all of this technology, the Orem Tumim. V'scher Golias ha'pilishti nosim lo. And David, who was about to walk out, he said, wait, David, wait. Here's a sword, the great, powerful sword of Goliath. Why don't you take that as well? That's what he did. That's what I saw happen. Okay. V'yishlach ha'melech likro es achimelech ben achitov ha'kohen. And because of this, the king went out to greet Achimelech, to find him. V'es kol beis aviv ha'kohanim asher benov, and all the kohanim and nov, v'yabo kol mel ha'melech. And they all came to the king. So we learn out from here the power of Lashon Hara. What exactly did Achimelech do wrong? Achimelech apparently did what he was told to do. The king asked him for information and he gave it to him. He relayed apparently all the facts. And therefore, why would we say that such a person is Enul Chelek Olam Haba? He's not going to have a portion in the world to come. Doesn't seem to be right. Doesn't seem to be fair. What did he do wrong? He just relayed the truth. He relayed the true information. The reality, he didn't. If we look at the information that he gave, he didn't, first of all, say anything about Achimelech not knowing that David was wanted or not wanted. Achimelech had no clue that David did anything wrong. And, in fact, the beginning of the dialogue, when Achimelech said, what are you doing here? David told him, he said, no, it's okay, the king sent me. So Achimelech felt completely innocent, he was doing nothing wrong. But for some reason, Doeg left out that information, giving the impression that the Kohen knew exactly that David was wanted, and I'm still going to protect him. Furthermore, what did he say? He gave him food. Which implies that, you know, he had plenty of food and he wanted to make sure he had even more. He didn't mention the fact that David was dying. He was starving to death. And if he didn't give him any food, then he would have just died right then and there. It was not that he was just giving him extra and extra and extra. So therefore, that's another thing that he conveniently left out in the information. Furthermore, when it came to the sword, it wasn't that David was walking away and said, hey, wait, David, wait, here's a sword. David requested a sword. He didn't ask specifically for the sword of Goliath, but that was the only sword that was there. And therefore he said, well, you're asking me for this? Here, this is the only sword I have taken. But what impression Doeg gave was that he specifically armed David to protect him. Not that he was told to do so, and he was told by David to give it to him, and then he ended up giving. So we see from here, as we mentioned on Shabbos, is how we'll conclude, the power, the dangers of Lashon Hara. That Lashon Hara, even though it's the truth, it's not the whole truth. It's only partial truths. And that's the worst type of a lie. If we look at the words, we didn't mention this on Shabbos, MS and Sheker. It's interesting that what exactly is the difference between truth and whole truth? So when it comes to a person going to court, let's say you have information A through Y that you know. When you tell the truth, you could only be saying information A, B, and C. When you say, I'm going to tell you the whole truth, it's A through Y, and nothing but the truth is don't add Z. Don't add anything which is not part of the information. So by giving partial information is really painting a picture of this is all the facts by not revealing everything. That's the greatest lie, the distortion of reality. If you look at the words emes and sheker, you see that beautifully. That sheker, what are the three letters in sheker? Shin, kuf, resh. And those three letters in the alphabet are written, kuf, resh, shin, right next to one another. So instead of looking at the entire alphabet, you're only focused on one small part. What is emes? MS, the first letter of the alphabet. The mem is smack dab in the middle, and where is the suf? The very end. MS is looking at the beginning, the middle, and the end. The entire picture. That's what truth is. And therefore, Doeg Hadomi, even though in fact he said the truth, he didn't say the whole truth, and that's great. That's a great form of Lashon Hara, which is true, but by distorting the truth is the ultimate of lies. We'll stop here.